We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter with Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing. David Price is one hell of a teammate. He's a very strong competitor. The support he gives his teammates in that clubhouse and in that dugout is outstanding. And it's returned to him. I think he genuinely appreciates competing with the Red Sox, the city of Boston, and going out and working with his teammates to compete and win a championship.
Well, so here we go now. Here we go. As if this game weren't interesting enough coming in, David Price at the center of it all tonight at Yankee Stadium. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. And we tell you that the program is brought to you by GilletteOnDemand.com. If you haven't checked this out, you need to do so. Gillette's offering this fabulous service now called On Demand that really allows you the convenience, value, freedom really to do all that you want and have a quality shave, which to me is important. I don't know about the rest of you, but check it out at GilletteOnDemand.com. 617-779-0985 is the number. Typically the day after a Red Sox game, and Billy, we can open up the phone lines right away if you would, please. Typically the day after a Red Sox game, we sort of examine the game from the night before, look at the managerial decisions, look at the key performances, look at all of it. And I have zero interest in doing that tonight. Zero. For lots of reasons. One, the game was a complete blowout. 8-0. It was never competitive. Not from the beginning. And then, frankly, the other story is that David Price's meltdown was way more interesting anyway. So David Price, without question, is the story tonight in New York. And if you have not followed any of this today, let me just tell you quickly what has happened here in the last 24 hours. Okay? One night ago, we were talking about the Red Sox playing for first place. Since that time, Dan Shaughnessy, the Globe, interviewed Price, spoke with him about his relationship sort of with the city, the fans, the media, the team, and I'll give you the short version. Shaughnessy asked Price, do you like Boston? And Price said, I like my teammates. Okay, and he's answered the question this way before. David Price hates it here. He hates it here. He likes the guys he plays with. He likes playing baseball. He can't stand it here. After he said that, the column went up online. Evan Drellick of Comcast Sportsnet tweeted Price's comments out with really very little editorializing on top of it. And then Drellick went into the clubhouse after the game. Price called him in, aired him out. There was a big blow up, and then Price went off on the media in general after the game. All kinds of profanity. John Farrell was asked about Price before tonight's game, and he said, among other things, the comment we just played for you. Okay, so David Price feels like it feels like he's coming unhinged a little bit, and yet at the same time, I can't help but wonder if this isn't a good thing for Price, because he hates it here. He's tried to be way too accommodating to people, and I think as a result, he's got way too many things, too many people he's trying to keep happy, and I don't think the guy can pitch well in big spots as a result of it. So maybe there is the chance that David Price now, in giving the finger to just about anybody who he thinks is against him, and that, I hate to tell you, Red Sox fans, includes many of you. It certainly includes all of us on this side, and I'm talking about Jim Murray, myself, Felger was here earlier, and many of us here at the Sports Hub and in the media in general. It includes all of us. And who knows who else? And honestly, at the end of the day, all I care about is the same thing just about anybody cares about. And that's if Price pitches well. If he pitches well. If he goes out there and pitches a great game tonight, wow, what a good story that is. David Price blows up at the media, screw you, you guys are against me, I'm going to go out, I'm going to pitch well next year too, and then at the end of the year, I'm going to opt out of my contract and I will be done with Boston forever, and you can smile too, because you'll be done with me. And if you turn back the clock to the day that Price signed with the Red Sox, you know what we all said? In a perfect world, he pitches 3 years here, he pitches well, they win a World Series, and he opts out. So you're not stuck with that seven-year, $217 million contract. 3 months ago in spring training, when Price got hurt, we thought that possibility was dead. Now maybe it isn't. Now maybe it isn't. And so, again, let me ask you as a Red Sox fan, what do you want out of the guy? What do you want? I know what I want. Pitch well. I don't need the interviews. I don't need the commentary. I don't need any of it. And by the way, the stuff that Farrell said at the beginning there about Price being a good teammate, I believe that.
I think that's 100% accurate. The way he defends his teammates, I mean, he's out there hooking them up with fresh Jordan cleats. Guys appreciate that, so I'm sure he's a hell of a guy to have in that clubhouse. But outside of the – and look, even outside of the playoffs and his season last year, I think, if anything, we underrated it. He was pretty damn good last year. But overall, from the get-go, this has been a bad fit, and it's not going to change. But that being said, he doesn't have to play nice. I don't want him to play nice. Screw us. Throw a baseball. Go out there. Do it. That's what they're paying you to do. Win games and pitch like you did last weekend in Baltimore. And I hope that he does.
So I was talking to somebody not too long ago in baseball, Murray, maybe about a week ago, who knows Price and you know, and understands him and said, oh, boy, he's sensitive. You know, it's not working there. It's not working there. It's just not. It's not happening. And, you know, he should have gone to St. Louis. He made the mistake. And so there you go. Now it is what it is. I mean, what are you going to do? The person also told me that Price didn't want to have surgery. He didn't think Price wanted to have the surgery. I've speculated to this point that Price wanted to have it. The Red Sox didn't want him to have it. And there was some sort of maybe conflict there. I don't think that that's true. Price wanted to pitch. And you know what? If he pitches like he pitched the last game in Baltimore, we're all going to be happy, including him. Because he'll be able to go out on the market basically a year and a half from now, or a season and a half from now, and he'll be able to get his big money again, and he'll be a happier guy as a result of it. And who knows, along the way, maybe with Chris Sale here now, the Red Sox win a World Series too. We'll see. We'll see how all of that goes. But honestly, all I care about is for the guy to pitch well. The other nonsense, the fact that he got mad at a reporter... I don't really know Evan Drellick. I've communicated a little bit with him on, you know, Twitter, direct messaging, and source. And he seems like a perfectly nice guy. So, but again, I'm not around the clubhouse. And if there are guys on that team that are agitated at Drellick, I can understand why. He's, you know, he likes to poke and prod. He's provocative.
He's a bulldog.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And he probably crosses the line sometimes too. So I get it. They can't stand him, and which I totally understand. I've been around plenty of teams where there were media guys that were singled out, and there were occasions where maybe not by the whole team, but I was that guy. So, you know, there was a player or two along the way that threatened to kick my ass, Murray. It happens. Sometimes it means you're doing your job. Sometimes it means you're being an a-hole. Okay, and I venture to guess that in Andrelic's case, both are probably true somewhere along the line, as it is true with many of us. I'm not into the media politics. I don't care whether he talks to the media or not. I couldn't give a rat's ass whether he talks to the media. And frankly, the whole, you know, I've said this from the beginning. I think Price has been too accommodating. Way too accommodating. Don't try to be everybody's friend. They're going to turn on you anyway, especially the media. With regard to the teammates and Farrell's comment about Price being a good teammate, absolutely 100% true. I would argue almost to a fault. When David Price came in here with that contract and those expectations, he was intent. And if you remember, he said at one point, look, I just want to come in and be one of the guys. You do the voice far better than I do, Murray. But, you know, I just want to fit in, be part of the staff. They're not paying you $31 million a year to fit in and be part of the staff. They're paying you $31 million a year to lead and be the ace.
He was the prize of that free agency class. You know, like, you can't just come in here and assimilate and think everything's just going to be hunky-dory. And you're making that kind of money, dude, like, a lot comes with that,
of
whether
course.
You like it or not.
Yes, once you sign the contract, there's expectation that comes along with it. You don't get the money without the scrutiny. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. And so tonight, on the mound, I thought this game was going to be important for Price anyway. And I see a number of you lined up, so please don't go anywhere. Because I want to talk to all of you tonight. I mean, I want to talk to you on most nights, but I tend to flap my gums more than I should. And so many of you don't get through. Tonight you will, I promise. And an important game. Just quickly, I said this 2 days ago, before the series started, I thought it was a good measuring stick kind of series for the Red Sox. Okay, a good checkpoint series. I think checkpoint was the term I used. A good checkpoint series. And there was the chance from the beginning that the third game, given the way these two teams have played this year, and especially the Red Sox of late, that the third game was going to decide the series, and you had Price going after the Baltimore game, now looking like he's healthy and clearly feeling his oats a little bit. Boy, if this wasn't interesting before, it sure as hell is interesting now. And so if you weren't watching before, you should absolutely watch now. We'll get to your calls when we come back. And really get into more of the David Price discussion. And before that, CBS Sports Minute. Tiki Barber brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Tiki says that tanking in the NFL is a difficult proposition, But I think he's going to talk about a team that's just going to try to pull it off this year.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Now here's the 2-2. Swung on and in the air to deep left. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. Chris Carter just hit a three-run home run to left to break open the game. Carter hits it harder. He drills a three-run home run over the auxiliary scoreboard in left. And the Yankees take a 5-0 lead.
So it was one of the big blows in last night's game. Complete ass-kicking. 8-0 the Yankees win, and so here you go. This is what often happens when you get a couple of decent teams going in a three-game series. It's going to come down to the last game. You're going to get 2 out of 3. Someone's going to win 2 out of 3. The Red Sox have David Price on the mound. Again, there was a good enough storyline there without the drama that David Price introduced to it last night. And so here's the question, and I don't have an answer for it, and I'm not sure you do either as a listener. It's more of a rhetorical question. But the fact that David Price went off last night, does it mean that he is becoming unhinged? Or has he unburdened himself? Has he gotten to the point where he just says, you know what, screw this. Screw you guys. You got, you know, to me, it's got to be all in or all out, and you guys are pains in the asses. I can't do it all. So you know what? Screw you. I have hitters to get out, and I'm going to pitch because I can't negotiate all of it, and he becomes better as a result of it. Like, to me, there's sort of an interesting line there, and I think it could go either way. I don't know how you feel, Murray.
I hope it's the latter.
Well, so do I. Yeah. Of course. Absolutely. But I think it could go either way.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, because I still think, you know, because deep down, you know, I think there is, you know, a sensitive, nice guy there. And if, you know, that's there, then he is, this also is kind of an act. You know, he's fed up, but it's not going to last that long. I mean, you can only kind of challenge that, you can channel, rather, that negative energy for so long. And you can use that and go out there and pitch as well as he did against Baltimore this weekend. But eventually that's going to burn off, or maybe it even happens tonight, and he gets shelled in the first couple of innings. I mean, hope that's not the case.
No, listen, I want to see him pitch well. The better story is if he pitches well.
Absolutely, and they need it too, because right now, with Rodriguez going down for up to a month, they really only have one reliable starter in my eyes, and Chris Sale, because Rick Porcello has reverted back to Rick Porcello of 2015.
So just quickly, Detroit comes in here next. Detroit is here right for the weekend. Brian Johnson's going to get the first game of that series on Friday night, tomorrow night. Johnson will start that series. Then Philly comes in here for 2 games. Okay, so I'm just checking this because Price will get a home start. Today's Thursday. Price will go Tuesday, right? Am I getting that right? Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. He'll get the Tuesday game against the Phillies. So his next start will be at Fenway Park. And if Price pitches a good one tonight, oh, he'll get cheers when he goes out to that mound. Especially if he
without question.
Especially if he pitches well on Tuesday and then comes off the mound. That could get fun. Okay, he can control this still. As much as the fans are on him, he goes out and pitches well, they'll get behind him. They will, because ultimately that's all they care about either. Pierre is in Lowell. Pierre, what do you got?
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
Good.
I'd like to argue that this is David Price's, you know, second most important start as a Red Sox.
Behind what, the playoff game last year?
Exactly, right, against Cleveland. Now, you guys just spoke about it. Is he going to get unhinged, or is this like, all right, you know, I'm standing up for myself, that's it, I'm just going to go out and play. And if he goes 3 innings and gives up 5-6 runs like he did it last, September, this could get real ugly, especially for a sensitive guy like him. But if he's able to pitch well, get a win, it would be great to see him back at Fenway and get a standing O or something, just to get him back on track, because we all want him to do good.
Yeah,
so
look, Pierre, again, I always look at these things and say, what's the best story, right? If you're capable of it, and I understand that many of you are not, but if you're capable of it and say, well, eliminate the win-loss, and obviously you want the Red Sox to win every game, but take Price singularly, what's the best story right now with Price? And you know what the answer is? That he pitches well, and he shuts everybody up. That would be a hell of a story. After the elbow thing last year, the playoff performance, the explosion last night in the clubhouse, all of it. David Price, what if all of a sudden he goes out there and just starts shoving bats down people's throats?
Well, that's what he was doing in Baltimore. He was efficient. The location was there. The velocity is up. I mean, I didn't expect any of this considering that injury. And he was flat-out dominant. And that's a pretty potent lineup, at least when they're on, and they were in those first couple of games against the Red Sox. So if he does that again tonight, yeah, you're 100% right. I didn't even thought about that, what it would line up if he would get the next start at home. And that he does, if he's lights out tonight, he will get a standing O on Tuesday.
I mean, it's just, you know.
And that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, you get some good drama there. Now,
screw the doubters, the haters, us and the media. Prove us wrong and go out there and just pitch.
Right, because we're going to bitch no matter what.
Right.
So the thing is, and the good ones recognize this. Like, look, all they care about, if I pitch well, I'm good. It's really that simple. It really is. Because the rest of it is just keep your mouth shut and say boring stuff, and then it's irrelevant. If you pitch well, it's fine. Look at John Lackey. John Lackey in 2013 became a borderline hero, came out of the bullpen in the World Series, the whole nine yards. It turned for Lackey because he pitched well, right? He pitched well. And so I would just say to Price, eliminate the distractions, and I have my doubts that he can do that.
Right.
Because the thing last night, he tells Shaughnessy he doesn't follow Twitter as much as everyone thinks. And then Drellick tweets out two things, and that's what precipitates the blowout, that he's following Drellick on Twitter, or he's hearing about it, or reading about it.
Just in that particular paragraph in the Shaughnessy story, he said he's not on there for 3 or 4 days at a time, or he's not on there for a couple of days, but then a couple of sentences later, he said, oh, well, no, I'll respond to 3 or 4 people after going through my timeline. It's like one or the other, dude. You're either not on there or you're on there all the time, which I believe
just
that he is.
Ignore it. Ignore it. Jack is in Rhode Island. Go, Jack.
Hey, how's it going, Tony? I find the timing of this funny because he says that he doesn't want to talk to the media or anything like that, and he's only going to talk to him on days of his starts. He says this the day before he starts, and I mean, I think that you're right. The best story is that he pitches well and shuts everyone up. But I feel like he's setting himself up for disaster. And I feel like if he pitches well, he might not be able to recover from it.
Yeah, Jack, look, all I know is that the guy's got ability and he gets in his own way a lot. Okay, so again, last night him blowing up, the timing interests me too, though. I will admit that because I look at it and say, well, he looked good on Saturday. He looked like he was in command of the game. The ball was not in the middle of the plate. You know, he basically hit the sides of the plate and kept the ball down. You know, and when you talk about good pitching, I mean, if we're going to describe it simply, it really is that simple. Stay out of the middle of the plate, and when you miss down or off the plate. That's all. Now, it's not that simple, as we all know, because there's a million pitches, a million approaches, blah, blah, blah. But in that game, that's what he did, okay? So now I look at it with Price and say, let's see what now happens going forward because he's got the ability. It's never been a question of ability. But a guy who's wounded physically, a guy who's hurt or injured, is not sitting there going off on the media about a tweet during the middle of a game. He's got other things to worry about. He's in the trainer's room. I'm not feeling right. His mind's occupied. So the fact that Price is feeling this, on some level I look at it and I say, he must not be worried about his arm anymore because now he's worried about other things. He's taken up these sorts of fights. He's angry. And there's a good chance. I shouldn't say good chance. There's every bit the same chance that is a good thing when he goes out on the mound tonight. John's in Malden.
Hey, Maz. Everybody's talking about David Price opting out of this contract. Okay, he's not going to opt out. He came to a team he didn't want to go to in the first place for more money. He's going to stay and soak up every dollar. Number two, he was good at Camden Yards, but he's always been good at Camden Yards. Look up his numbers. I don't put much into that other than he's good in that stadium. And number three, the real reason I called was you said on a previous show that if the Red Sox don't win the division, it's an underachievement. Well, we've seen the Yankees play this year, and it looks like they're for real. And the Red Sox got quite a few injuries and a number of bangs and bruises and whatnot. And I think it's going to – I wouldn't say it's an underachievement. Would you say if the Yankees win, it's an overachievement?
No, it's an underachievement for the Red Sox if they don't win the division. This team is expected to win the division coming in. I expect them to win the division now. Now, look, if you tell me Chris Sale goes down, Bogarts goes down, Betts goes down, well, then fine. We throw the whole season out the window. I'm telling you, what they have now is good enough. It's good enough. And Price's history, I understand what it is in Baltimore. It's always been good. In Yankee Stadium, it's okay. It's not great. I looked it up earlier. His ERA is 3.8 or something, 14-8, something of that like over the course of his career. It's not terrible. It's not good. It's not terrible. It's not great. It's pretty good. It's competitive. Okay, it's pretty good. And I do find it interesting, too, that the Yankees, oddly enough, with those right-handed bats in there, and I'm talking about Judge, Sanchez, and now Carter, who's hit a couple of home runs in this series, and I think Carter's a bum, but in any case, he's got power. The Yankees have not been great against left-handed pitching this year, so that also seems to favor Price. Typically, it's a good ballpark for left-handed pitchers, all of that. So I want to see now how Price answers. I was interested in it just after the Baltimore game. He pitched great on Saturday. Now here you go, the finale of the trip in New York, a chance to win the series, a chance to pull back into a tie for first place. Like there is, or I should say, get back within a game now. Had they won last night, they would have pulled for a tie. So there is, you know, there's importance in this game. Even Farrell said it before the game tonight. It's an important game. And so as much as it's June, it's a checkpoint series. And for David Price, it is very much a checkpoint game. I want to see how this goes. I want to see what it looks like. And something tells me that Price is going to be into it. It feels like he's engaged and dialed in again, which is a good thing. Murray's got your headlines.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No, not at all. I think, you know, this is a hard game. You're going to go through ups and downs. You're going to, you know, have some struggles that you got to come out of. And, you know, I'm working towards that right now. Obviously, I'm not happy with the way I'm performing. But, you know, you got to take it all in stride and turn the page for the next one.
It's Rick Porcello from last night. And, look, Porcello is, obviously had a market correction, if you want to call it that, back to what he was prior to last season. Last year was obviously the aberration in his career. He's not what's his record now? 3-8? Is it 3-8 or something like that? And I know you don't go by wins and losses, and I'm just telling you, Porcello's given up too many hits, too many homers, and losing too many games. So I will tell you, the Red Sox need to get that one figured out. Okay, they got to get that one figured out. They got to get Porcello back on the beam again because they don't have all that many pitching options. He hasn't been absolutely god-awful, but he hasn't been good enough. Second thing that bugged me about last night's game, and it's a bigger picture projection or assessment, is that when this Red Sox team came into the season, I looked at them and said, they're too right-handed. So, their best hitters, Hanley, right-handed. Betts, right-handed. Bogarts, right-handed. Pedroia, right-handed. You go up and down the lineup, all right-handed batters. And so, in the absence of David Ortiz, I felt like, okay, well, the lefties are going to have to step up. They should be good, though, against left-handed pitching on those occasions where they face them. They are now 5-6 against left-handed starters. They should be better than that. They got shut out by Sabathia last night, who's pitched well of late. I think it's now his last five starts or something. He's got an ERA under 2, and all of them have come after Yankee losses. So Sabathia's been pretty good, but even so, it just feels like lefties are shutting down the Red Sox a little too easily. And I would like to see that change. I think it has to change, but it shouldn't be happening at all, honestly, because they have too many good right-handed hitters for that to happen, with or without Pedroia in the lineup. Again, Betts, Bogarts, Hanley alone. That should be enough. 617-779-0985. We'll continue with the discussion on David Price. Certainly has a very, very big outing tonight in New York against the Yankees. Matt's in Nashua, New Hampshire, has more of a big-picture question with the Red Sox. Go.
Hey, Tony. I had a question about Pablo. Is there any chance they try and move him over to first base?
Okay, so Matt, they can absolutely do that, but let me ask you.
Because he's left, and that would work out better at first base.
Because he's
opposed to having a right-hander.
Because he's what, lefty?
Yes.
A lefty hitter, you mean?
Oh, he does. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, my mistake.
Okay, so look, I would just tell you that if you put Pablo at first, well, then Moreland doesn't play. Sam Travis doesn't play. Because Hanley's DHing. And then, so you're going to weaken your team by doing that? It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. Again, we have a couple open lines, 617-779-0985. Angelo, my buddy Angelo is in Methuen. What's up, Angelo?
Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. I'm going to be polite like I always am with you, okay?
Sure.
Last night, this is my opinion, when Betts caught that takeaway home run, right?
Yep.
It was, in my opinion, I could be wrong. It was a good catch, but it wasn't a sensational catch. Now, did you watch, when they were in Oakland, any of the games?
Sure, yeah, but what specific play are you talking about?
I'm talking about the one Bradley made. He took away a game-ending home run off of Healy. In that center, which is a wall of fire, number two, he went way up, and his glove went way over the fence. They caught it. He comes down nonchalantly. Nobody knew he had the ball. He runs in like he usually does, right? So anyway.
So, Angelo, look, this has come up.
Point,
go ahead. What? This has come up now a couple of nights. You don't think Bradley gets enough credit?
No. I'm not saying, hey, only when he deserves it. In other words, the next day I watched the game because I recorded it, right, on the when they only show up for 2 hours. They didn't show that inning. They just went to the bottom of the tent when one of the eights hit a home run to win the game. But like I'm saying, I like Bradley and the other one. I don't dislike Betts, but they overshadowed that. They made a big thing out of that game, out of his catch last night.
So, Angelo, look, what I would tell you is that, I'd love you calling the show. Don't take it so personally on Bradley. There's no campaign out to get him. There is no propaganda out to diminish Jackie Bradley. There's none of that. Maybe it's just gotten to the point where we are so accustomed to Jackie Bradley playing great defense out there that it takes something really unique and special for him to open our eyes. It could be that. I don't think there's any sort of agenda or anything of the like. Overall, with regard to Bradley, I think he's played well. Of late. The beginning of the year, he's useless. But lately, he's been pretty good. And in fact, even the first game of the series, Bradley hit a couple of balls that could have very easily been out of the ballpark on another night. So I don't even know if he had any hits the first night. But I thought he swung the bat well. Okay, and we know he plays a hell of a center field. My one major criticism with Bradley, aside from the one that everyone has, which is the streakiness, is that I would like to see him be more consistent and accurate with his throws. He's got a great arm, and he doesn't need to be chucking the ball all over the place. The accuracy is more important than the pure arm strength, and it sometimes feels like he likes to show off his arm strength rather than actually throw the ball on the plate to the place where it's supposed to go. And when I mean that, I mean that with accuracy, okay? He generally goes to the right base or that sort of thing, but he's also clearly impressed with his own arm. I would rather be impressed with actually throwing a guy out by the throw being accurate. Mike is in West Roxbury. Go ahead.
How's it going, Tony?
Good.
I was wondering, obviously there's a huge discrepancy in salary caps in baseball, and luckily, baseball holds on to the claim that they have the most parity of the four major sports, which I think is just by pure chance. You look at basketball, and people are mad now because it isn't about what team offers the most money. It's about guys choosing where they want to go. So do you think if that one of these high market teams like the Yankees or the Red Sox rattled off, three out of four, that there's going to finally be some uproar and people are going to say, hey, we can only spend $50 million. The Red Sox need a pitcher. They go out, they grab Chris Sale. They need a hitter. They grab this. When is it going to come to the point where they have to put a salary cap in?
Okay, so Mike, do you really believe now that there is still a competitive balance problem in baseball?
I don't, but I don't see why not, Tony. Like, Red Sox go and get every top flight free agent whenever they need a player, and a team like Minnesota loses them. Whenever they get someone that's good, the guy leaves. So I don't see, you're right, there isn't a problem right now, but I just don't understand why not.
Okay, so what I would tell you is the fact that the Red Sox go get a high-priced player every time they need him doesn't necessarily serve them. It doesn't. And with Minnesota, and you want to tell me that there are smaller market teams that have an inability to retain players? I think there was a period of time when that was absolutely 100% true. Okay, and maybe Tampa Bay is still one of those teams. They signed Longoria to a big contract, and they've kept him. But, they lost Price. They lose guys. But does it happen anywhere near as much as it used to? I mean, Billy or Jim Murray. Like, when you look at it, do players say, well, that guy's contract is going to be up and they're not going to be able to pay him, so he's going to be on the market. What? It doesn't happen nearly as much as it used to. And if you want to look at a guy like a Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper's potential free agency doesn't have anything to do with Washington's inability to pay him. It has everything to do with Scott Boras wanting to take him to the market. So that's going to happen no matter what. Jason's in Plymouth. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, Tony. Two things. One, on Remy, a positive note, before he made the controversial remark, he had a good line about Tanaka being slow to the mound, slow to deliver, so slow that the Red Sox batters could make scrambled eggs while they're waiting. And also, I thought that umpire reminded me of Frank Drebin from The Naked Gun last night with his, you know, enthusiastic balls and strikes calls.
So, Jason, look, I think this all tells you that Remy's incentive or inspiration for saying what he said the other night is that Tanaka slows the game down. Tanaka slows the game down, and this is something that is true with too many pitchers. So I want the pitch clock. I've wanted it for a long time. I think we're headed there. I think that Rob Manfred is ultimately going to cut some sort of deal with the Players Association. They're probably going to have to make some sort of trade or concession to make the deal they want, but I think ultimately we're going to end up with a pitch clock. And there's a lot of ways to improve the speed of the game. Lots of ways. In fact, you know what? Now that you mention it, tell you what, I received an email a short time ago. Wait till you hear this one. Okay? I've said the other night, the mound visits in Major League Baseball are maddening. There's way too many of them. Way too many mound visits. And I asked the question the other night, do you guys remember this? Where I said, I'd love to know where the Red Sox rank in mound visits, whether or not anyone actually tracks this sort of thing, because Christian Vasquez, it feels like to me, goes out there constantly. This guy emailed in a little while ago, and this is, I think his name's Billy, okay? Billy says, hey guys, I went on MLB.com gameplay logs and calculated the number of mound visits the Red Sox have had this year. The Red Sox have played 58 games this season. They have visited the mound 126 times for a grand total of 2.17 visits per game. And then this guy, sicko that he is, God bless him, says that he's willing to go through and do it for every team if we want him to. And I said, I asked him whether or not this included the manager going out to change pitchers. And he replied and said, this is non-pitching changes from coaches / managers. So I don't think he's even including visits from the catchers. And this is the one that irritates me. The catcher goes out to the mound, so the 200 or however many visits he said, what was it, 126 visits? Non-pitching changes. That's just the pitching coach going out there to talk to the pitcher. 126 times. You add up a couple of times here and there, you know, a couple of minutes rather, for every one. You're talking about what? Like 5 minutes a game just on those visits, and that doesn't include Christian Vasquez going out, Xander Bogaerts coming in, every other one. Oh, it takes absolutely forever on these things. Quickly, Brian in New Hampshire with what is obviously the story of the night. Go ahead. No, Brian?
Hey, Matt.
Go, what do you got?
Points. On David Price, you know, I'm done with him. I didn't like the signing when they brought him in. You know, when he's done with his, you know, contract opt-out, let him go. I don't want him. You need more people like Sale with the demeanor where they don't care what's going on around them. They just pitch. And on Bogaerts, would you be okay if he's Jeter light, where he's hitting 10 to 15 homers a year, you know, up in the top 10 in doubles and playing good but not great defense?
I'd be happy with 15 and not 10. Bogaerts should not hit 10 home runs. Bogaerts should hit 15. And that's probably around what Jeter averaged for his career. So if you're telling me he's Derek Jeter, 40 doubles, 15 home runs, and I'll give you a slugging number of about 450, let's call it 450. Okay, Bogaerts hits 315, 320 in that area, or 310 even. I don't know what Jeter's career average was, but put it somewhere in there, and his OPS is in the 800s because he's going to have a pretty high on base and a pretty high slugging. Fine. But two home runs, is that what Bogaerts has right now? Two's not enough. We'll wrap it up with your calls and check in with the Buzzard's Nest next.